Hi, welcome to Outright TV, a weekly video and podcast bringing you stories of LGBTIQ people and allies across the globe and going through this pandemic together. I'm Louisa from the UN team here at Outright Action International, and in today's episode, I'm interviewing Amanda McRae. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, so glad to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. Can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. My name is Amanda McRae. I am the Director of United Nations Advocacy at Women Enabled International. We are an organization that was founded in 2012, and we work to advance rights at the intersection of gender and disability, particularly for women and girls with disabilities around the world.
That's wonderful. Thank you for being here today. I wanted to start our conversation talking that July is Disability Pride Month here where we are right now. And I wanted to ask you what you think is important for us to highlight to our viewers from the disability rights movement, and how do you see it all connected with everything else that's been happening in the US, but also worldwide?
Yeah, so here in the United States, one reason this is Disability Pride Month is because a landmark piece of legislation, the Americans with Disabilities Act, was adopted this month, 30 years ago. So this is an important milestone this month for ensuring disability rights here in the United States. But the Americans with Disability Act isn't just something that affected disability rights here in the U.S. It also was one of the precursors for forming the disability rights movement internationally and forming the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which is an international human rights treaty that builds on the Americans with Disabilities Act and applies to people all across the world. So I think those are two really important things to be thinking about during this month, is this legal framework that we've got for ensuring the rights of people with disabilities. But despite these legislative achievements, I think we are seeing right now and this year that because of this global pandemic, persons with disabilities are still one of the first groups to be left behind when there's a crisis. And so there's still plenty of work to be doing to ensuring human rights of this group, to ensuring that the discrimination, stigma, and stereotypes about people with disabilities that maybe people have deep inside stay suppressed, don't emerge in these times of crisis, and that we are valuing the lives of people with disabilities on the same wavelength as everybody else.
Yes, great. I feel like you're doing my job for myself because you're talking about everything that I want to know. So I know that Women Enabled launched a report, COVID at the intersection of gender and disability, and I had the opportunity to read it and I found it wonderful, and everyone who's watching this should go and check it out. We can put the link down here for people to click and watch it and read it. But I wanted to ask you a little bit to share about some of your findings to us, and I found it particularly very interesting because it's a full gender lens and not necessarily just women as gender lens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we in our work have, particularly in the last few years, been trying to be inclusive of a gender lens that's broader than just women and girls. So in particular, many people within the disability rights movement identify as non-binary or gender non-conforming, and we wanted to make sure that issues impacting those groups are mainstreamed across the work that we do. But in particular, we included that in our COVID-19 work. Back in March and April, we conducted a global online survey of women, girls, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people with disabilities to get a sense of what the issues were really impacting them that may be different from women more broadly or from people with disabilities more broadly. And what our report found was that these individuals were, well, it had four main findings, so I'll talk about each of those. The first was that these individuals were having trouble accessing the health services they needed specifically because of their gender, gender identity, or disability. So those range from things like a woman with a chronic illness who was pregnant with a complicated pregnancy, not being able to access her doctors or her healthcare providers, except for via telehealth, which is something, but was not adequate to address her concerns and her needs. A woman who had to delay menopause care, a woman with a psychosocial disability or a mental health concern. And that was that menopause was further exacerbating her mental health issues, and she was feeling like her disability was deepening because of that, her impairment was deepening. to people who couldn't access the hormones they needed for their gender identity because they themselves could no longer leave their houses and didn't have people they could rely on to go and get those medications for them. And then other people who were talking about, for instance, physical therapy appointments, very much needed for many people with physical disabilities to maintain mobility and that range, no longer being an option for them. And so all of that just having a profound impact on their mental and physical health. Beyond that, many people reported that they were either concerned about or had already experienced some discrimination in accessing COVID-19 related health information and services. Whether that was because in their context, laws and policies had been adopted where there was some kind of rationing of care that may have deprioritized people within one of their groups, whether that was older people, many people with disabilities are older, whether that was people with intellectual disabilities, whether because of, but then beyond that formal discrimination, people thought that because they were people with disabilities, because they were non-binary, because they were women, that they might be informally deprioritized in access to things like COVID-19 testing or urgent care related to COVID-19. And beyond that, and this isn't highlighted so much in the report, but we've been hearing from others, is just information on COVID-19 has not been made accessible to people with disabilities in many contexts, such that they're unaware of the things they need to do to protect themselves and to protect other people in their communities. And so that's been a huge problem. The third thing is that people with women, girls, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people with disabilities are increasingly having trouble meeting their basic needs, whether that's because they've lost their jobs and no longer have income to buy food or menstrual hygiene items or other things that they need for their daily lives, or because they've lost access to formal or informal support services that kept them, being able to cross the street by themselves, or kept them be able to take a shower or prepare the food that they maybe otherwise wouldn't, otherwise were able to access. So all of those things, because of lockdown orders, shelter-in-place orders, suddenly became inaccessible, even more so for women with disabilities than for other groups. And then finally, we had about a quarter of the people who responded to our survey say said that they felt an increased risk to their personal safety, that they felt they were at high risk of violence because of COVID-19. We had one woman in Southern Africa with albinism identify that because of stereotypes in her community about albinism, they thought that she was a carrier of COVID-19, and she thought that put her at risk. We had a non-binary person in Texas talk about how that person was now isolated with their family, who was transphobic and emotionally abusive, and they feared for their own safety, physical and mental, because of that. So there's a lot of work to be done around COVID-19 as was related to this group. And they had just been broadly overlooked to date in the COVID-19 response.
Yeah, and I found it so interesting, but not interesting happy, interesting sad, how there are many intersections of what we found in our report on the COVID-19 and the impact on LGBTI persons, and the similarities of the ways of like the lack of access to health, the being left behind, the fear of the families and the inside space, the not having the support group that a lot of the times are selected families or a selected group of people. And all those intersectionalities, they're like very, very clear for me. Like reading it, I was like, yeah, this is very similar to what we found. And moving from that, what I'm thinking is, why do you think within the LGBTI community and the disability community, why do you think we don't usually talk about that intersection? Because I feel like there's so much work and so much to be done there, but we don't hear that much about it.
Yeah, I think you're right in that a crisis like this really highlights how much we all have in common in some ways, despite differences. But I think one of the reasons that we haven't, as movements, worked more together is that intersectionality, frankly, is hard and people are still figuring out how to do it. Within the disability rights movement, Women Enabled is not the only group working at an intersection of different identities, but one of them. There are a few others out there. And it's just been really hard to integrate an intersectional lens into the disability rights movement more broadly. But beyond that, when we enter various spaces, we work at gender and disability, but when we enter feminist spaces, we're seen as people with disabilities. And when we enter disability spaces, we're seen as women. And we're not seen as belonging anywhere within those spaces. So I think changing attitudes about the fact that like we all have different identities, we all belong in various spaces is important. Beyond that, I unfortunately think both that in the LGBTI movement, there may be some ableism. And within the disability rights movement, I know from personal experience that there is definitely discrimination and stigma around gender identity and sexual orientation. And those are things, and even just around gender more broadly, frankly. And those are things that both movements, I think, need to work on and stamp out. And that I hope that we as movements can work together to do because of the intersection. But yeah, I think increasingly the world is recognizing that everybody is an individual with various identities. We all intersect with each other. None of us are just one thing. And as part of that, I hope that we can all kind of start working together to solve many of these problems that we're finding in common.
Yeah, this is beautiful. I hope someone like cuts this and makes a little video clip because it was wonderful. And just to finish our conversation, I wanted to ask you if you have any recommendations on where to find more information, to read about it, and also how to be better allies to the disability movement.
Yeah, so I'm going to send you to our website, naturally, womenenabled.org. On that website, yeah, not only do we have fact sheets about issues that particularly impact rights at the intersection of gender and disability and a number of resources, we also have a map of advocates worldwide that are working at this intersection. So wherever you are, you want to be reaching out to people who are working at the intersection of gender and disability, you can find those people on this map, which I think is a really valuable resource. And yeah, one thing I think we can be doing jointly as our movement and as yours is just to be reaching out to those advocates, to be talking with each other, to be holding interviews like this, joint events, just having the conversations that we need to break down any like stigma and stereotypes that might exist between our groups and find our commonalities. And that's what we're trying to do at Women Enabled. And we hope that you all will be allies with us in that.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you, Louisa. It was really great. And we love working with Outright Action International. You all are one of our favorite organizations to work with at the UN. So.
Oh, likewise. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. This was Outright TV, and you're going to see more from me and my colleagues on the next episodes. Bye, everyone.